The Diamondbacks began a critical 13-game stretch that could determine the outcome of their season. The first three games will come against the St. Louis Cardinals at Chase Field, which we will preview on today's episode of the Snakes on the Diamond podcast. All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Snakes on the Diamond podcast. I am your host, Mike McDermott, joined today by our normal co-host, Wes Byers. So, Wes, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I have been proven right. If you just, read my writing and follow it, I totally called what happened with the Shohei Ippei gambling scandal. So, I'm always feeling great when I've been proven right about something I've said. So not going to talk about that today. Like you said, we're talking about the D-backs Cardinals upcoming series today. When we're recording this, it's a day off.
So we're recording this Thursday, but it's a 3-game series, Friday, Saturday, Sunday at Chase Field. For the promotional item you'll want to get, it'll be the Alec Thomas t-shirt, which I will be covering that game Saturday. So, like I said, you can follow me on social media at Mike McDM. I'll be on Twitter. And if you try to follow me on the other platforms, you won't find me posting any there. But Wes will now plug his social media in here.
Search my name. I'm available on all my names at like some variation of Wesley Byer, C. Wesley Byer, or Wessential is what I am on YouTube if I ever actually put out a video. So, Michael actually does attend games in person and talks to people on the Diamondbacks, actually, like, you know, in press conferences. I don't think we really pointed it out that, like, Michael has, like, in-person coverage of the Diamondbacks. It's well worth your time checking it out. So let's get right into it. Kind of a disappointing road, Stan. I think that they salvaged it, like I'm sure you talked about.
Yeah, they avoided the disaster, but it wasn't a good road trip. They avoided the disaster road trip.
They walked
away from that road trip 4-2.
Not a good series, like the outcome overall. I mean, they really actually could have done way better than they did, and it's embarrassing that they have the same record as the Cardinals. I mean, they're both teams that are 6-7, dealing with some injuries. Like the Cardinals had Lars Nootbaar on the IL. He is just getting started up, but he'll be activated for the first game of the series. I'm not sure of who else is.
Sonny Gray just recently came off the IL.
Yeah. I don't think, are we facing him in the series?
No, Sonny Gray is not one of the probable pitchers.
Neither is Lance Lynn, unfortunately. I think we all, Diamondbacks, will cherish that moment, and gave up four home runs in an inning against the Diamondbacks on the Dodgers last year.
If they're lucky, they'll see him in St. Louis later in the month.
Yeah, that would be nice. I think that, you know, all the Diamondbacks need to, you know, pad their offensive numbers, especially in home runs. I'm missing two names that are coming off of or they are on the DL. We'll look that up real quick. Because, I mean, they're important names.
All right. So, looking at the Cardinals' 40-man roster, and we're going to pull that up here. Best place to look is the Cardinals' website. So, Keenan Middleton. Oh, actually, Jack actually wrote him down on Inside Diamondbacks, which you'll want to go to. So, their injuries include Keenan Middleton is on the 15-day IL. Riley O'Brien, Drew Rahm, Tommy Edman, and Dylan Carlson. Oh, sorry, Dylan Carlson and Matt Carpenter
are the players
that are currently on the IL.
Yeah, Tommy Edman probably won't be back until, I mean, there's a small chance he's back when they play the Cardinals in St. Louis later this year, later in the month. I don't think he's going to be back. They probably will miss that series. I mean, those are significant names. They don't have a lot of, I mean, Paul Goldschmidt had a great opening day and has been off, you know, a pretty poor season since then. I don't think you can really count on Paul Goldschmidt to decline just yet. I don't think he's proven that he's done, although he's definitely not the Paul Goldschmidt of his prime that was with the Diamondbacks. I know the best hitters really have been Brandon Donovan. They're two catchers who, like, obviously they both can't really – I mean, I think who's the other catcher that was just looking at here? I'm sorry about that. Who's your backup catcher?
So I'm drawing pretty sure
– drawing a blank on his name, but he's got good results.
Ivan Herrera is the
– there you go.
They have three catchers on their 40-man roster. Wilson Contreras, obviously everyone's heard of, and then Ivan Herrera, who's been mashing the ball of late.
Yeah, no, they both have good, you know, have been probably. I mean, they're just fine at the catcher position in terms of offense. Brendan Donovan, mostly been playing left field. He's had a decent year so far.
Yeah, Donovan's an infielder by trade.
Yeah, I mean, it's not – I mean, he's had one – I think he's had one start. It's like two starts in the infield. This is not – last year was a poor year for the Cardinals. They're still not, like, you know, I don't think they're really, like, significantly improved. Like, their offseason, they kind of shored up some of their weaknesses with pitching. It's, you know, like – and, like, a lot of the young rookies they're counting on, you know, had, you know, mediocre, poor results. I think the Diamondbacks are a better team right now.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting pitching matchup. Like I said, you got so for game one, you got Brandon Pfaadt going up against Steven Matz. That's gonna be a pretty interesting matchup. Like I said, I don't know what the Diamondbacks' numbers against left-hand pitching is, but given the way their lineup's constructed, I wouldn't be surprised if they had good numbers. Game two is Ryan Nelson versus Kyle Gibson. Game three is Zach Gallen going up against Miles Mikolas. So the two opening day starters will start on Sunday. So those are the main pitching matchups. On paper, I think the Diamondbacks, I think first game's going to be a wash between Matz and Pfaadt, depending on if Pfaadt can keep the ball in the yard. Game two, I think, is a close one, depending on which version of Ryan Nelson shows up. Whereas Kyle Gibson, on the other hand, is a guy who eats innings, but not spectacular run prevention numbers. He's probably going to be in the 90 to 95 ERA plus. And we're talking, if you want to translate that to a raw ERA number, we're talking like 4.243. And then Sunday, I think the matchup favors the Diamondbacks with Zach Gallen taking the mound. So anyways, going back to you, Wes, which pitching matchups do you think go from, most interesting to most lopsided for the D-backs?
You know, I mean, honestly, I think it's pretty favorable in all three games. I think they have their best starter. I mean, right out of three we're facing, Miles Mikolas is probably their best starter. But, you know, he's facing against Zach. That's probably the best pitching, you know, matchup right there. For, you know, if you just want this watchable baseball, you would expect to see some solid pitching in game three. Like you said, with if Brandon Pfaadt can kind of limit the long ball, which is, you know, it's been a weakness for Ryan Nelson too. I could see both those, you know, those starts going horribly, or, you know, them shutting down the St. Louis Cardinals. I think game two is probably, you're right about that's the weakest matchup for the Diamondbacks. I mean, you can make arguments for game one, but game two, I just feel like, you know, it depends on how confident you are in Ryan Nelson.
All right, so D-backs versus left-hand starting pitching. And then obviously, not every plate appearance is going to be against a lefty in this situation. What marks that one is that the starting pitcher's left-hand. So the Diamondbacks are hitting .279 as a team with a .765 OPS. So when and that's going to be relevant for game one because Steven Matz is lefty. That's when you see Suarez moves up in the lineup. Blaze Alexander gets a start in the field. Randall Grichuk gets a start. Those are your lefty mashers right there. That's when you see them get prominent spots in the lineup.
Yeah, you know, I think Blaze Alexander has proven that his bat is at the very least like it's up to par with the standard for hitting lefties in the major leagues. It might be better having him start his DH that game, just get his bat in the lineup, not necessarily his glove. Eugenio Suarez is another guy that like I really. He definitely mashes left-handed pitching real well.
Yeah, so looking at Blaze's numbers, he's hitting against left-handed starters, he's hitting .375 in 27 plate appearances.
I mean, small sample size, but that's that to me is it's not a very, it's very small sample size, obviously not. You could go very poorly going forward, and then it just proves that sample size, you have to have a bigger one than that. But no, I mean he's done really well against left-handed pitching, and I he's hit much better than I thought he would. It's like I think we talked about this the other day privately, is that the results were the opposite of what we would expect,
or at least we thought he'd be better with the glove and would struggle more with the bat. Although, yeah, like I said, Blaze has 9 starts this season, 8 against left-hand pitching.
Yeah, no, it's been favorable for him. Like, I mean, Torrey has given him a chance to succeed. I think everyone would have preferred for this to be like to put him into major league games with less on him. Because I mean, a lot of this is he's filling in for Adoree Perdomo. It's the injuries that kind of force the Diamondbacks' hand. I mean, I'm not even sure. I would think that if Jordan Lawler wasn't injured, he would have been called up. So, I mean, that's additional pressure that would have been taken off of Blaze put on him.
I would say if Jordan Lawler was healthy, he'd probably be playing shortstop right now, and Blaze would be DH, would be spending more time at DH. But
yeah.
Like I said, they got it. I don't know what this. I don't necessarily know what the solution is. Obviously, he's normally not that bad defensively, but for whatever reason, he's just not something. Something's just preventing him from making the play or something like that. It's just,
we talked about. I mean,
it's just like one small thing. Like everything looks good until it's time to catch the baseball.
The psychological aspect is something that's really. It's not really talked about. It's underplayed a lot, especially in baseball. For a rookie, there is a lot of pressure on you to succeed and make those defensive plays, regardless of what the situation is. I mean, how many times do you do anything with that many eyes on you at once? There's not very many professions that have that level of pressure, actively, on you. I mean, I think most people would have a bit of the yips the first, few weeks of being in the major leagues. I mean, yeah, a top prospect who's, one of the reasons why they're drafted in the first place, for their makeup and ability to handle all that. Yeah, they may not have that problem, but for the average major leaguer, it's not unusual for that to happen,
Well, I also think someone like Blaze obviously hasn't. I think that's actually one of the first things he mentioned about making the team, where it's like so many more eyes on you playing. Because his first major league game, obviously 48,000, whereas a sold out minor league crowd is maybe 25% that of the attendance in AAA. That's kind of the main difference. And sometimes the lights can be a little bit too big in certain situations. Now, the good news is since he's hitting at the major league level, in the matchups he's been given, that buys him some time, and that gives you some options to work with. You can put his bat in the lineup without putting his glove on the field. And for the most part, like I said, the bat is going to make or break his career more so than the glove.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the biggest thing is that he's succeeding in the area that like his job's really dependent on. I mean, yes, that the errors continue. That will be a problem the longer it continues. But the biggest thing for sticking at the major league level is just, you know, being able to hit your weight, you know, hit your worth to, you know, keep, make it worth, you know, keeping you on the roster and putting you in the lineup. And he's doing that. So it's like one less thing to worry about. If you can just make the, you know, correct whatever little thing that is preventing him from, you know, following through and making the plays, it's really seems just like a brain fart, you know, just not, you know, whatever. I mean, it's hard to really articulate the cause of a brain fart, essentially. Who knows?
And even solid defenders will have a sloppy series or two. You saw Suarez do the same against the Rockies. I think he left about 4 outs on the field in that series. That doesn't necessarily affect him because he had a chance to get those runs back with the bat. That's kind of just what you got to do.
Yeah, so I'm not too worried about. I mean, I think he'll certainly he'll get time. I would be surprised if he's not in the lineup on Friday. Who's right hand? I know Miles Mikolas
both
gives
the right hand. Yeah, Matt's so the lefty in the series.
So what are the lineup we would expect for right handed?
I would assume they split the two starts at shortstop. They don't really have. Unless they really want to play Jace Peterson at shortstop, they really don't have a left-hand hitting option. Yeah, and Wes's reaction selling it here.
Yeah.
For audio-only listeners, he cringed very hard when I mentioned Jace Peterson at shortstop.
Frowny face. I don't like Jace Peterson. That is not my choice of who I would be playing, but I understand that we really don't have an option. Like, we have limited options for that. I would think You'll see Jace Peterson or Kevin Newman there. I don't like that, like, just as much as anyone else. Unfortunately, that's the hand we got to play with right now. Aside from that, who else is going to be like that? Like, just for our listeners, you know, explain like who's going to not be in the lineup against right-hand hitters.
I mean, I think you could afford to put. I think Gibson would be the tougher matchup for. Blaze, because Gibson's a sinker slider guy, and I think that's kind of where the holes are. Mikolas more of a four seam curveball guy.
Yeah,
so I would actually start Blaze on Sun. If I had to take Blaze out of the lineup, I would pick Saturday based on the matchup. But
you've got to expose the guy too, opposite handed pitching, if you expect him to ever succeed. So you're definitely right about that. Same handed, yeah, you've got to expose a guy to same handed. Pitching if you wanted to succeed, especially if you're part of a platoon. You can't just immediately, you know, platoon him and be like, well, he's a platoon hitter, and then never play him against same handed pitching. So I mean, yeah, it would be smart. I think that's the better matchup for him.
Because the Diamondbacks are going to start seeing more right hand pitching as the season wears on. Like, first 14 games they're going to see 9 left handers. That's like weird. That's why you haven't seen much of Jock Peterson this season, and I feel like why. Also, he's kind of been, I guess you'd say, not necessarily scoring up baseballs. He's just not getting in that consistent rhythm of playing. That's just the luck of the draw as is. That's not to say that Jock sucked, because obviously Jock's gotten on base at a pretty high rate.
I mean, I've never been a big fan of Jock Peterson, and I'm not going to Just because he's he's played for our division rivals, but no, he really hasn't been given that many starts, and it's largely because, like, just for whatever freak reason of scheduling, they've faced an unusual amount of left-handed pitching. So yeah, it'd be Jock Peterson in a DH. You'd probably see Grichik and Jake McCarthy in the outfield, maybe.
It depends on how they feel with their outfield defense. I think you're going to see a lot of Jake McCarthy in this series. Although McCarthy's not a guy who necessarily gives up any value to a left-hand pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, that's not like Jake McCarthy. I don't even know what to say about him. I'm hoping that he can... find some middle ground between being a terrible hitter and being, you know, I don't think he's the guy he was when he was first called up, you know, where he's, you know, just that.
No, I think he is.
Uh, I might be thinking of someone else. The first time they were called up. I'm trying to here, look at this. Bro. The second time he was called up.
Talking about 2022.
Yeah, 2022. I think he's somewhere in between 2022 and 23. Really, my point is.
Yeah, the biggest problem with McCarthy is he makes a lot of soft contact.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is yeah, you know, you like. My concern was having Jake McCarthy in the lineup is until he's, you know, making harder contact consistently. Like I'm always like, I think everyone's going to doubt like the bat. So we're talking about outfielders. I think like Alec Thomas, I know has made some progress getting off the injury list. When do you think we can expect him back?
I don't know. Not really anytime soon. I think he's just started getting into baseball activities. So we're talking. And we'll probably get a better update when Mania gets to talk to Tori and we get a chance to talk to him this weekend. Have something on Friday in regards to Thomas and Eduardo Rodriguez. Obviously, the timeline with Jordan Montgomery is pretty set forward, straightforward. And Montgomery's going to start Sunday, and then he's going to join the team and then make his next start after that. With the major league club.
Yes, that looks like it very much is going to be sometime next week, Thursday or Friday.
So yeah,
maybe Saturday if there's, you know,
Oh, wait, Montgomery's starting Saturday, not Sunday. So he's starting on the 13th. So I don't think it'll be set. I don't think it'll start on the 20th. But rather than that, the 19th at the latest. I think he has to be on the major league roster by the 19th per his contract.
Okay. So, I mean, that'd make sense to me. So we won't see him until the Cubs series, I think.
No, after that. No, you made it pretty clear with San Francisco.
Okay. So San Francisco, I guess we will, you know, I'm just making clear on the timelines. I know I'm just trying to get some of the injury updates. Is there any other major news that we have to discuss as far as injuries go?
For the Dimex, it's going to be a while. It's going to be at least a couple. I would say it's going to be at least a couple more weeks before Eduardo Rodriguez throws a pitch for the Diamondbacks. Like I said, he's just getting to his bullpen. He's not necessarily ramped up that he can do a minor league start per se. And then he's going to need to make two or three before they feel comfortable activating him off the IL. That's just how it is.
Yeah, I don't expect him back until probably like a month from now, I think is a reasonable
timeline. Not that long. Two to three starts plus a sim game, that's 2 weeks.
End of May.
2 to 3 weeks.
The last week of April, the end of April, I think is probably the timeline that's realistic. I'm sorry, I didn't make it sound that far off. You know, I know this is one of the tougher stretches right now. I mean, it's largely been made worse by some just bad luck.
You look at the team on March 18th, they were pretty much healthy at full strength, and then Eduardo goes down, latch strain, and then the next week Seawald has an oblique strain. Then the next day, Jordan Lawler ruptures his UCL on his right thumb on the silliest of ways possible. Then Alec Thomas Perdomo has a hamstring injury trying to leg out a double play.
Yeah.
Then Perdomo has the knee injury.
That lets I guess he underwent meniscus surgery. It's going to be at least a month. Probably June, I think, is realistic timeline to expect for him. It's going to be 2 months probably till he's back with the team.
It could be 6 weeks.
They're saying at least a month for
6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, I think that I'm gonna go with closer to 8 weeks, maybe like, you know, more than that, just because of knees are tricky. It's unfortunate. I mean, like, they just had bad luck.
Say 6 weeks, by the way. It's faster for a hitter to ramp up than a pitcher.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, I would just expect them to I mean, yeah, I'm sure it'll be pretty quick from the ramp of us hitting that. You know, the greater thing is not pushing the timeline too much. They've been pretty cautious with pretty much all their major players that have been in the IL so far. So that's why, one of the reasons why I expect a more a longer timeline than you do. Just to be clear, is the team has been really cautious with like how they like. I mean, if you look at Erod, you look at Grichik, a lot of these a lot of these guys, they've taken their time getting to come back. So I don't think they're going to rush the timeline. I don't expect that to change unless it was, he's healed up real quick and, you know, everything goes exactly how they wanted to. I wouldn't expect the 6 weeks.
Well, it depends on how you're feeling at shortstop.
Yeah. If you're not feeling too good about it, then absolutely you might have him hurry along a little quicker, but it definitely won't be at the expense of his health. And I think I don't know if there's really any other major topics of discussion other than
We mentioned Seawald, but Seawald's recovery time is probably not really worth mentioning before May 1st.
It's not even set in stone necessarily. I don't see them. Same thing. They're not going to rush him with that. Oblique injuries are. They can be really easy to re-aggravate. Like anything that's like I've had a like broken rib right there. I've had a dislocated rib. Yes, you can actually dislocate a rib. And anything that's like the trunk or your side is very, very easy to injure. Not even just like, you know, playing baseball, but just living. So that's why I understand actually why Erod's injury has taken so long for him to come back. Same thing with Seawald. That's my concern, and you're right. Like,
also, yeah, May 1st, 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's a good example too. They're just tricky injuries, and I May 1st is probably the first we'll be really talking about him, you know, having a timeline of coming back.
Yeah, and Seawald has a worse oblique injury than what Walker had.
Yeah, and that especially with them, like. They're about the same, the rotational forces that you have, like, as a pitcher versus, you know.
The severity of the strain for Walker was a grade one, whereas Seawald's a grade two.
Yeah.
But Walker was rushed back and re-aggravated and was a grade one, back to a grade one, and was re-aggravated the injury. That's what happened. That's why you got to be, and baseball is such a rotational game, you have to be very careful with those particular injuries.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, I was just thinking about it. Like a pitcher has like just as much rotational force is put on their obliques, and then a hitter does. Hitter actually might have more just from like the force from the bat. So, but then again, I mean, a guy throwing super hard is putting like the maximum amount. I mean, you're more worried about like, you know, the strain on your arm. It's just the way, just thinking about how the forces are applied, but. Yeah, the May timeline's probably very likely with Paul Seawald. That actually might be a little too optimistic.
Well, he's a relief pitcher that throws one inning, so the ramp up period's going to be shorter than the starting pitcher.
Yeah, that's the one saving grace there.
Yeah, it looks like Ginkle's got the ninth inning locked down pretty well. It's just a matter of getting him the baseball with the lead.
Yeah, no, I mean, the bullpen, I don't think is really. I don't think it's that bad. I think that a lot of it is like one, it was already taxed from some extra inning games. You have your closer already out. You're relying, I mean, in some cases, it's been not really on the relievers, it's been more on Torrey.
I mean, here's the problem, half the bullpen is completely unreliable.
Yeah, you got like,
how do you feel about Castro in the game after the seventh inning?
I immediately think of like how I can.
What's
I can.
What's the first thing you're gonna do when you see Miguel Castro trying to protect a one-run lead?
Think about unaliving myself. That's what I'm gonna think about.
All right. Well, how do you feel about Kyle Nelson trying to protect a one-run lead?
That's fine. I think he can probably do it.
Okay.
That's a big guess. I was actually impressed, and I the other day I was not feeling well, and I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm gonna check the score when I went to bed. I put 3-2, like a 3-2 lead in the seventh,
and that ended up being the final score.
And I was amazed. Like, literally, that's a miracle. You know, if that can happen, maybe there can be peace in the Middle East.
Yeah. I was going to say, your main two culprits, obviously, with the bullpen are going to be Miguel Castro, Scott McGuff. McGuff's had a really tough week. Like I said, he took losses in Diamondbacks. Three of the five losses in that losing streak went to McGuff.
Yeah.
Two of them extra innings. And then the other one was a meltdown against the Rockies in the first game of that series. But that's, I think, an arm that has, that's an arm that has to do better. Scott, in McGuff's case, has to do better. Because, like I said, getting the ball to Ginkle. Well, what happens if Zach Gallen only goes five innings? That's where the problem lies, for me at least. It's like, what happens when the starter can only go five?
I am looking at the Vegas odds for the series. I think that's something that we can add to our discussion. So the Diamondbacks are like heavily favored for game one. They're at...
Yeah, the Diamondbacks hit left-hand pitching pretty well this year, even though Mats is off to a good start. Like, D-backs match up very well against left-hand pitching.
They're predicting a 5-4 D-backs win on game one. Yeah, I mean, like, that's, I can't disagree with that. The over-under on runs is over on 9 runs. I think, yeah, I would take that.
Let's not focus on that stuff. Let's just focus on these series.
But overall, so, I'm just saying, I mean, Vegas favors the odds of the Diamondbacks winning in game one. I don't see game two. I'm just curious, you know, hey, let's compare our predictions with people who are paid to do so. I wonder if I can find the prediction for
this. Yeah, see, I know where to find one. And we can go into the Inside Diamondbacks series preview, which you can find by going to si.com/MLB/Diamondbacks, and that's the website right for it. It is not my article, but it is Jack's. At the bottom, he has the D-backs taking 2-3, splitting the first two games, and Zach Gallen winning on Sunday.
That's I think the prevailing wisdom is probably like that. That seems reasonable. I think a series sweep's possible. I think two or three is probably more realistic. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be watching an L on Saturday. There's just something about Ryan Nelson pitching at Chase Field that just bothers me.
Yeah, that's you may be an unintentional like curse or horror crux when you're at Chase Field. Just saying, the one time Nelson? I've seen. Yeah, very much. He does not fare well, and I would not be surprised if he hires a priest to, like, you know, like puts up or those things in anime with a little,
don't get me wrong,
little spell. Yeah, but when you're covering him, he has not done that too well. Not done too well. So
he threw 6 scoreless innings in the first start I covered of him. First game I ever covered.
So you're predicting a loss in this game too.
Lost in game two. The D-backs bullpen's going to D-backs bullpen that game.
I think that they may surprise you. If they win, that wouldn't surprise me. Just to the universe to screw with your expectations. If they win that game, if they go one and two, of course it'll be they win the game on Saturday and not the other two that we predict that they will win.
It's like the series against Houston last year. The game that clinches the one I didn't cover.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to go. I didn't get to watch. I didn't get to witness the clubhouse celebration and the pool party. Except on TV. I think they've broadcasted it on TV. I could be wrong. But
yeah, I think so. I don't remember off the top of my head.
So that's basically the gist of it. Like I said, we're both predicting 2-3. Like I said, I'm agreeing with Jack's prediction. They're going to win Friday. I think they're going to. The D-backs lineup should hit Steven Matz pretty well. And I think they will have like a 3-4-1 lead. I don't think it's going to be 5-4. I think the D-backs bullpen's going to bullpen it in the second game of the series. And then Zach Gallen's going to do his stopper thing in game three. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I think those, if that happens, those extra runs in game one will come from the bullpen. But yeah, you know, we were like, tie it back to what you were saying with Miguel Castro out there. It's like, there's really, there's only two guys that you can rely on. So, I mean, I would expect the bullpen to be able to hold the lead just because you got, you know, everyone rested again after a day off.
There's some guys that pitched a lot of games.
Yeah, that's my thing. They all could use a rest. So hopefully a well-rested bullpen allows them to hold on to those leads. I mean, I don't think a series sweep is like out of the question. I don't think this Cardinals team is very good. I think that they're maybe at best will finish 500
team.
Like at best a 500 team.
I think the Cardinals are a 500 team this year.
I mean the Royals look like a better team than the Cardinals. So
yeah, especially with Bobby Witt Jr. doing ridiculous stuff.
Yeah, they've gotten off to a hot start. You know, if you're looking at Missouri teams, I don't really like the Cardinals. So at minimum two or three. I can't disagree with you just to disagree with you on this one. So I
give the Royals credit; they're at least trying.
Yeah, no, the Royals are trying, and I was very impressed with their offseason. They addressed all their needs. The Cardinals had a very good offseason too, though. Let's be real. They kind of did the same thing. Signed a bunch of pitching. Not the best ones, though. Lance Lynn, what kind of improvement is that?
I think John Mozeliak has his 2018 notes when he made those signings, but anyways, 2019 notes. He's 5 years behind the times.
Yeah, retrograde amnesia. He hit his head and totally forgot what year it is. He doesn't know about. He's just been in a coma for the last 5 years. They've been weekend at Bernie's with a coma John Mozeliak.
All right, so kind of just reiterating as we're getting off topic here.
Yeah,
we both agreed to a three for the series for D-backs versus the Cardinals. And it's going to be an important stretch, like I said, 13 games in 13 days against teams that are expected to be 500 or better in 2024. And the D-backs will be competing with a bunch of these teams for wildcard spot. On paper, obviously, Diamondbacks, I think the best team on that stretch is going to be the Chicago Cubs, followed by the San Francisco Giants. Well, of course, there's only three teams, but so.
Yeah.
Giants are always going to be tough because one is a Division II. San Francisco always plays the Diamondbacks well, except for that last series last year, but that's an aberration.
Those three teams, I think the Giants are the bigger threat. The Cubs actually do look pretty good.
Yeah, the Cubs are playing very good baseball.
They've made some brilliant moves. I love their, we'll talk about it later on, but I love some of their signings. This isn't going to be a tough stretch. They're facing some, you know, pretty good. I mean, the Cardinals are the weakest team they're going to be playing on the stretch.
Yeah, and then after that, you got Seattle, and then you got the Dodgers after that. So like I said, Diamondbacks are hitting the toughest part of their schedule right now.
This series...
you've already got your bunny games in against the Rockies, so it gets harder from here.
I'm going to call this a must-win series.
I would agree.
And I don't think most people are going to disagree with that. Like, if they do not take this series and take at least two of three... they are off on a very bad. I mean, it's going to be, I worry that could send the team into an unending spiral that they cannot get out of. So yeah, I want to see them win two or three, hopefully on our next, recap of the series, we can have some positive to discuss and more news as usual.
And that next podcast episode should be Sunday, and then we'll have Jack Vita in to talk about the upcoming Chicago series Monday on the 15th. He'll be here for that. You'll want to check that out. If for those new to the podcast, Jack was here in October to discuss the first two games in the NLCS, which of course is our most listened to podcast episode through 52 episodes, I think now. But it could be also just the timing because they were in the NLCS. But I digress. So.
Could be that. And give me final thoughts, wrap this up.
No, I think we're good. Let's just get right to it. So if you enjoyed the podcast, if you're listening in, make sure to leave a 5-star review, whether it's on Apple, Google, Spotify. Let us know what you think of the podcast. Give a review and put a comment and leave a comment on that. If you're watching here on YouTube, make sure to like, subscribe, and click the bell to turn on notifications, and we'll just on YouTube, leave a comment down below what your series prediction against the Cardinals is. The D-backs win the series, D-backs sweep, D-backs lose, D-backs get swept. Those are your four choices. Those are your four choices. Let us know.
Thanks for watching.